This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Everybody, this is episode number 77 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
Hallie is once again out tonight. We had a little bit of some scheduling difficulties this week. We got our days confused. We were trying something new, and Hallie had to work. So it's just going to be the three of us tonight, but I think we can hold it down.
I think so.
Yep.
Before we get started, I just want to thank everybody for being so great regarding our last episode. I know that I was a little bit nervous because I knew that we weren't going to be talking about very much magic, and I didn't know how our listeners were going to respond to it. But to be honest, it was actually our best episode. Like, in terms of, like, we got the most retweets, we got an insane number of likes. It was just so well received, and I was blown away by all the positivity. So thank you so much for everybody who retweeted it and told us your story. I mean, I can't speak for Chris and Hallie, but it sounds like you guys also were basking in love for a little while there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, totally. I was just pleased that the things that we were able to address were able to help other people with things that they were struggling with, or, you know, that they were just touched emotionally. Like, maybe people that haven't even been through our same experiences were just like, I can try to understand, you know, this situation better now. And so I think it was a really good idea that we decided to do that episode.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, even Katie, coming from an ally standpoint, you know, there were even people that tweeted us and said, you know, you gave me ways to approach my loved ones that are going through this, and thank you so much for being you. And that must have felt really good.
Yeah, I mean, I know I didn't have, like, as much to say as Hallie and Chris, but I was really glad that, you know, there are a lot of people who want to be allies and just need kind of a first step in how to do that. And so I was glad that I could provide that, and glad that people received that well as well.
I was really surprised by how many of our listeners identified in a similar way. Like, I was seeing so many tweets that was like, you know, I'm a non-binary person from Columbus, or I'm sort of gender fluid in Tallahassee. And I was like, I had no idea we had so many similar folks in our audience. Like, I was not expecting that. And I think, you know, I know sometimes you hear demographics where they say, like, 1% of the population is transgender. And, you know, I would have assumed that there would be less folks that maybe identified as non-binary. And it just felt like there were so many more. And I just wasn't expecting that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great.
Same. Yeah, so I was really happy about that. Another thing to be really happy about is we got so many new patrons. I don't know where you all came from, but thank you so much. I was getting the email notifications, and then, like, one after the other, and thank you so much. So thank you to Joe, Samuel, Nick, Martin K, Ryan, Thomas, and Allie. Thank you so much, and we're certainly working on some new things for the new year, so hopefully you stick around to see what comes from that. But this weekend was really busy, in particular for Chris and I. SCG Milwaukee was this past weekend. Our friends, Jadine and Emma, were in town. They both stayed with me. Mrs. Mulligan was around. Matthias Hunt was doing coverage. Several other friends that we know were there. Chris, you and I both played in the main event. How did it go for you?
I did not do quite as well as I would have liked. but I still think that, for the most part, I played well, that I didn't make too many mistakes, and I am still confident about trying to day two in Dallas. I decided to play Titan Shift like I have been, and it's still a sweet deck. I still love playing it. It's still really fast. It can hang with other decks. I like that there are various ways that you can pilot that deck. I like that, you know, you can be on the Breach version, you can be on Titan like I am, or you can just do Scape Shift and have, you know, Rug. So there's a bunch of different ways you can go about playing a version of that deck. And Titan is my preferred one right now, but I will probably branch out eventually just to see how the other half lives. Round one, I got paired against Infect, and that is always a very tenuous match. When I have swept Infect, I have been very surprised as to how we did that. But I, it's like, how did this happen? But I ended up getting paired up round one, first table, versus a friend's brother.
So you I had mean to play table against, one?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was like, this will be short-lived. So I had to play against Connor, who comes by my store every once in a while. I ended up just getting swept by Infect. And it didn't help that we finally have, you know, our deck shuffle ready to go, and then we get a deck check. And I'm like, no. I'm like, I just finished unfucking this deck from like registering it. Now I have to re-unfuck it because now I have to reshuffle it.
Or refuck it.
Or that too. So I ended up losing to Infect, but then I went on to sweep Jeskai Control, which was really nice. And that matchup can be somewhat difficult depending on how fast you're able to get on board. It's just like some matchups with these decks. It's just a race. So that felt pretty good. So I was 1-1. And then I went on to play round 3 versus Dredge. I ended up losing out of 3. Usually that matchup, I would like to say, is in my favor, but it depends on how well they dredge. And sometimes you just get the nut and you're just on top. The third game we played, I was just not able to get any removal. I didn't have any angers to wipe their board, so I ended up losing out of 3. Then I went on to face a really lovely opponent who I've seen at some other events around here. He was on Goryeo's Vengeance. He was a pleasure to play against. I lost super quickly, so we spent most of the time just getting to know each other and talking about Magic and the podcast and other things. And so that was really an awesome experience. And then the fifth round, my opponent did not show up. So I was not able to play any Magic, which was disappointing, but I guess I got a free win, so that's okay. Round 6, I played versus Affinity. Lost out of 3. Affinity, again, a race. Can I get rid of your artifacts? I'll tell you, it felt pretty good, game 2, to Fracturing Gust and, like, gain a shit ton of life and then just have him concede. So that was kind of nice. Round 7, I played Burn. Lost out of 3. Again, Burn. I usually don't worry about Burn too much anymore. It's either a race. Do I have it? Do you have it? One of us is going to get there first. But usually it goes to 3 games. And so I didn't really feel too bad about that loss.
Yeah, your Burn match is surprisingly good. Like, every time I've watched you, it's been like no contest.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Yeah, it's just been like pretty good. That's why I was like, damn it, we were almost there again. Round 8, I got to play versus someone that I know from the Madison crew. So that was really nice. They were on Infect. We always have awesome games together. We get along very well. They're also a judge, so we talked about some judging things. But I got swept by Infect. We were both surprised to see each other at the bottom tables. We're like, why are you here? It's like, shouldn't you be at the top tables? And so that was kind of funny. And then round 9, I got to play versus Bant Eldrazi, piloted by a lady that I had seen at a tournament the previous week. So we kind of got to know each other. She wrecked me with Bant Eldrazi. I had to call a judge on myself the first game because I drew 8 cards like an idiot, and I've never done that before. I was like,
I've done that, don't worry.
Well, I was just like talking to her, and I'm like, 1, 2, 3, oh shit. And so I'm like, judge. And so he's like, oh, I have like a drew 8 cards, my bad. So even though I didn't do too hot, I think I finished, 2? Yeah, 2-7, whatever it is. And so not the best finish, but again, I feel pretty good that a lot of my matches, or at least half of them that I did lose, were out of 3, so it wasn't like I just got destroyed completely. I still feel like I did either learn something from my matchups, like Aaron and I have talked about from Emma, or I just enjoyed all the people I played against. Like, I didn't play against anyone that was rude or annoying or anything. Everyone was super cool, and that was really nice. And so I got to make some new friends. I also did some networking while I was there with some judges that I know in the area. I was able to meet our regional coordinator so I can start moving forward with my plans for level 1. So that was really nice. Got to have lovely dinners with Aaron and our friends, and that was really cool. And I also did two modern challenges while I was there. The first one didn't go off so hot. I made a really terrible mistake versus a Malir combo in which they had Avid Mind Sensor out, and I still tried to scape shift.
Oh, no.
Yep. It's like, and I just looked at it, too. I was like, yeah, Avid Mind Sensor. And then I'm like, scape shift? And they're like, uh-huh. And I'm like, fuck. And I had already stacked all my lands. So I'm just like, I'm just going to sign this slip and drop. And I'll be over there hiding under the table if you need to find me. So that was less than ideal. And that was the first modern challenge I did. The first game of that, the first round of that, I had to play versus Ponza. And that is... Yeah. It can be rough. It's like a race. I don't like playing versus that deck. It's not my fave, for sure. Plus, I just really hate Land Destruction. It ruins all the decks I want to play. So it just makes me sad.
What is Ponza?
That's actually a really good question. So for those playing along at home, Red Green Ponza is basically a ramp Land Destruction deck. So there's a lot of Stone Rains. They play the Moanbali Acid Ooze that destroys a land and then you get to grab a land. So you get to ramp and destroy a land, and then you do like lots of Anger of the Gods. There might be some Blood Moons, but it's basically just a really pesky land destruction deck. And it's had a bit of a resurgence in the last year, I want to say. I know one of the guys from A-Team is a really big champion for it, and it's freaking annoying.
It is, and there are Blood Moons. They are there. it is a less than fun time. Yeah, I hope I don't have to play it like anytime soon. And then I played, my friend Austin, who is on Junk. That was a really close game. He was very concerned about, me beating him. Like, he was just convinced he was going to get destroyed. And nope. I think we played 3 games, I want to say. Sounds right. My mistake versus Malir combo. Then I dropped. And then the second modern challenge went better. I ended up breaking even. So I went 2-2. Beat Junk and Elves and lost to Green Red Tron and Malir combo.
Man.
Again with Avid Mind Sensor.
Oh no. Man,
that card. I think Avid Mind Sensor and like a Johnny Vengeon are up there with like my two like most hated of cards. And like I don't like to use like hate about cards because I'm sure they all have their place somewhere, but I just don't want them anywhere near me. So it just wasn't the best. But I was able to use my prize wall tickets to get some more pins from the SUD prize wall. And those things are really cute and like super addicting. So I think that I can definitely see the appeal for people that prefer to do side events instead of the main event. Because, I mean, there are some nice incentives. There are some cool things you can get. So, I'm hoping that if for some reason my dreams are shattered and day 2 doesn't happen for Dallas, to try to do enough side events to make my little heart content. And yeah, so all in all, it was a good experience. There was a tad bit of some weird unpleasantness.
Tell them about it, because you were livid.
I was. So the round that my opponent didn't show, which was round 5, I was sitting there waiting at the time for my opponent to show up. My 10 minutes hadn't been up, and a friend from the shop came by and was saying that his girlfriend was playing versus a gentleman that was on Lantern Control. It was probably the second time either that she had to play it that day or in a row, so she was already kind of frustrated with that. But on top of it, her opponent was not being very kind to her. He had been rude to her throughout the match, and it was just generally like a very bad experience. So when my time was up, I kind of wandered over there to watch their match and see how things were going. And I'm standing behind her, so I'm facing him. And at one point, he says to her, "You know you're never going to get out of this, right?" And she was kind of like, "What?" for like a second. And he was like, and so he repeated it again to her and was like, "Well, I can do this and I can do this and I can do da da da." So basically telling her he had a lock, but not in the most pleasant of ways and not how I would want to be talked to or anyone else I know to be talked to in that manner. So he was trying to somewhat bully her into a concession. And I was like, this is not okay. So she starts to pick up her lands. And before I even know what I'm doing, I have my finger out pointing right at him. And I said to him, I'm like, you don't get to decide that for her. I said, you can decide that for herself. And she's like looking at me and he's just like, what? Because he's like surprised that I said anything. And at the same time, her boyfriend he said something like, that's not true, because like implying like there was a way for her to possibly get out of it, or a way that she didn't have to concede to him. Now, most people would say, okay, if you can't, you know, in the interest of time, you know, concede to your opponent if there's no way you can get out of it. Now, to be fair, she was on breach. She does have Emrakul. She could just keep on going for days. So both of them could, I guess, annoy the piss out of each other if they really wanted to. But, you know, I felt like instead of explaining to her in a nice way, you know, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'll keep doing. Would you like to concede to me and go to the next game? I have had plenty of locks on people with Mind Slaver and offered them that option. And should they choose not to go ahead and do that, that's certainly their prerogative. But I presented to him in a way that isn't like an asshole. Mm-hmm. And this guy was just like on 10. So he raises his hand and calls for a judge. The judge comes over and he starts to say, oh, judge, I was just explaining to her that she was going to have, you know, a lock on her and that she wasn't going to be able to do anything. And I interrupt him.
And I was like, finger was out.
Yeah, I was like, that's not what happened. Stop lying. And I'm just like trying to be like, you said this, you did that. And like at one point, the judge has to like tell me that I need to like basically Hakuna my tatas for like 5 seconds. And I'm like, I'm really sorry. I said, but he is not telling the truth. This is not what happened. And I'm not going to let him talk to my friend that way. So they have to both be talked to by the floor judge. The head judge eventually gets involved. Mind you, they are the last match that is going on in the open. So turnover ended up taking quite a bit because of this particular situation. It was decided by the head judge that neither of them had committed a rules infraction, because he was trying to say that her boyfriend and I were offering her strategic advice and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, we're just telling you not to be a dick. Like, I don't know why that's hard.
Which, to be fair, that is strategic advice. It's just aimed at him.
Right. It's like, in your best interest, you probably shouldn't be a douche canoe, the more you know. So he decided to have the floor judge sit there and watch them play just to make sure they were both being cordial to one another. Completely behind that. That is totally fine. The guy tried to turn it around on her and be like, well, she was being nasty to me too. Da, 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 da. It's like, well, I could see her mood probably going down and being disappointed in other things if you have some person that's, you know, saying and doing certain things to you. I didn't find out till later that supposedly he had been throwing her cards back at her or something.
Oh,
so
nope.
So I didn't witness that. So I can't speak to that. But based on what I saw, not cool. So the head judge wanted to talk to me off by the side. And I was like, okay, this is what I saw. I stand by it. There was also another bystander that was backing up my story and her boyfriend's to be like, yeah, like this was on cool. This isn't right. And so basically, the head judge was like, you know, we're going to have somebody, you know, watch the match, you know, what happened? What were your, you know, observations? And so I reiterated to him what I had already said before and just said, you know, I can't prove that some of this was not motivated by the fact that she is a lady. I said, and, you know, in my experience, this has not happened to me, but to some it does. And so that could be part of it. It could just be he's having a bad day. It could be this. I don't know. But like, that's not how you talk to someone. And that's not how you should talk to your opponent, especially one that this is their first big tournament. You know, do you really want to sour this experience for them so they think that everybody's like this and they don't want to come back? That is not being a good ambassador to your community. So I had a big issue with the whole thing. In the end, she did end up losing. They played their third game. They got a 15-minute time extension. And then after everything was said and done, unfortunately, she left in tears and very disappointed. And, you know, especially when she was looking forward to such an awesome day and to have it all ruined because of some asshole. So I was able to talk to her. So I don't think she's going to give up on Magic. She's going to keep doing her own thing. This isn't, you know, on her. This isn't anything she did. But I don't know that he necessarily understands why people were concerned with him. I know the judge did talk to him again later to be like, you know, how would you feel if you were in this position? And I think the only takeaway that he took was, well, I guess if I was a newer player, I'd feel this way. And it's like, well, it has nothing to do with even being a newer player to a certain format. You just should be cordial to your opponent. You don't have to like them, but you shouldn't, you know, go out of your way to make their experience really shitty.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's dreadful. And I remember it's funny because, like, we kept trying to leave. So, like, we thought the day was over with and we were like, all right, we're going to go get dinner. Chris is like, one more judge. And I'm like, okay. And so I saw them talking to a judge and I'm like, okay, they're talking to this judge. No, there's another judge. And I'm like, oh, they're going all the way to the top with this. Like,
yeah. Cause I wanted to apologize to the floor judge and be like, listen, I wasn't getting all crazy with you. I'm just want to make sure that, you know, she was taken care of and that someone wasn't taking advantage of her. So I apologize if I came off poorly or anything. And he's like, no, we're cool. And I'm like, all right, well, I just figured that would be a good thing to do. And I did get some advice from other judges about different ways we could have handled the situation. So that was nice. But I think that given the information that they had, I stand with, you know, the head judge's decision. And I feel like given such a terrible situation, they did the best with, you know, what they had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And props to you for standing up for her. Like, I felt so bad. And like, you know, she looked like a girl where she could have kicked his ass. Like, she looked like she was an athletic girl. She was she appeared to be a tough girl. And I just assumed that she would, to have somebody get to her like that, it must have been pretty intense because she looks like on any other day, she'd kick your ass. And that's why I was really surprised too. And I don't want to seem like, I'm not trying to imply that like a smaller girl is just going to take it, but like she looks like somebody who wouldn't normally take your shit. And so for her resolve to get sort of worn down like that, it must have been really bad. Does that make any sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good. I hope that didn't come out wrong.
I mean, it took everything in me, you know, at one point when he asked me to stop talking to him condescendingly and smiled at me.
Oh,
it
girl.
Took everything in my being not to like fly across the table and just be like.
Like in Mean Girls?
Yes.
We're all jumping on the table like hyenas.
It's like, like, please don't, you don't want to go there with me.
Yeah. So I ended up finishing 6-3, which I was proud of because I had never played, Dredge in a really competitive environment before. I'd done a couple of PPTQs, but I had never taken it to an open or anything like that. And so, you know, knowing that if this were a GP, I could have made day two felt really, really good. So there were two big takeaways from this weekend. I had a feeling that Infect was going to be really big and that really influenced my deck choice because, Ad Nauseam is what I normally play and Infect is Ad Nauseam's worst matchup. It's pretty much unwinnable. Some Ad Nauseam players don't even sideboard. It's that bad where you're just like, fuck it. And so I was not going to take Ad Nauseam into a field that was expected to be heavy on Infect. So I started playing Dredge again. Felt really good about Dredge leading up to it. I felt like all of my matchups were at least 50-50 or better. I didn't really feel like there was a deck I didn't want to see. And, the two big takeaways for this weekend is that my Infect matchup is not as good as I thought. It's still not as bad as Ad Nauseam, but it was definitely work. And also my Merfolk matchup is better than I thought it would be. I ended up beating Merfolk twice and by very large margins, which I wasn't expecting. I had been reading a lot of guides by other Dredge players who really made it seem like you need engineered explosives. You really need all of this gas to like get through them. And I didn't really have a problem at all. So I was really surprised by that. I started off the day really strong. I was 3-0 going into the day. I didn't have any buys. And then I had to face my friend Emma Handy on camera.
Oh, girl.
and I remember, and shout out to Star City Games for recognizing that this was going to be entertainment. So Emma and I were sat at table 19, and I remember walking up to the table, and she's already there. And I look at her, and I yell, I don't want to do this! And she's laughing. And we're right by the registration desk, so one of the judges looks at us, and he goes, did you two honestly get paired against each other? And we're like, yeah. And he goes, we got to get this on camera. And so he walks away for a minute, and then they announce the feature matches. So I'm under the impression that we weren't initially going to be a match, but somebody there recognized that two somewhat visible ladies in the community who happen to be friends and were staying together going at it on camera might be something that people want to see. And so they announced the feature matches and sure enough, we were right on camera. I had an off-camera feature match earlier and then, which I won. And then I had an on-camera feature match before, which I also won. So I was feeling pretty good. And Emma ended up beating me. And it's a shame that we weren't mic'd up because we were goofballs the entire time. Like, we were making fun of each other. We were making voices. I had not had that much fun in a really long time. And, you know, looking back on it, I can certainly see some ways that I could have played differently. But Emma, you know, is such a good player. And when I really watch that and I see, like, how far ahead her lines were compared to mine, I was really happy to sort of lose to her. And I really wished her well. And people seemed to really enjoy watching us, which was really good. After that, you know, there really wasn't any too many surprises. You know, I beat Grixis Delver, which felt really good. I beat Banzeldrazi. I had to face Infect one more time and gotten beaten by them. I played Tron. I beat Affinity. So I got my win in. So I was 6-2 going into round 9. And then I had to face the mirror. Yeah. And the Dredge Mirror is painful. Like, I actually boarded out my Leyline of the Voids. Like, I didn't bring them. Like, I had them in the deck up until. And I was like, no one's going to play Dredge this weekend. I'm not going to need these. And so I go into round 9, and I had seen this young man at another table earlier in the day. So I knew he was on Dredge just by looking at him. And I was like, oh, girl. And after playing 8 rounds of Dredge, I felt like my eyes had crossed. So I was hungry. I was tired. My brain hurt. And he was on some, like, cute version of Dredge where he was running, like, Rally of the Peasants and Haunted Dead. And I was like, And so he beats me game 1, and we're sideboarding, and I was like, I just don't want to do this. And I was like, you go, girl. So I basically just signed the slip, and I was like, Godspeed. And I just didn't want to do it. I frankly just didn't want to do it. I had a very long day. I don't enjoy playing the mirror very much, and so I kind of let him have it. And, you know, I was happy with the 6-3. It was better than I thought it was going to be, and I really, really enjoyed myself in that regard. It was great to meet listeners. It was great to see some judges that I know. I did play in a Legacy challenge, which was terrible. I got paired up against some dreadful matchups and had horrible luck and bad dredges, and I tilted, and it was just a bad scene. So Sunday was pretty miserable, but Saturday was really great. I'm really glad that I got to see my girls, you know, Emma and Jadeen. Chris and I are thinking about going to SCG Columbus in a couple of weeks where we'll see them again. And, overall, it was just really great. You know, it was really nice for me to see Dredge sort of show out. I think Dredge was like the number one deck that weekend, which a lot of people were blaming me for. And I will take full credit. I'm completely okay with that. I saw a lot of ladies, which felt really good. I had a feature match against a fellow lady named Lindsay. She was super. There was a really great artist there who made a chibi token of me, so that's might be coming out soon. And very well run as usual, very positive experience, and I was really glad that we went.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So along with the positive experiences, there were a couple negative experiences that happened this past weekend, particularly when it comes to a couple of pro players, as I like to call hashtag pros behaving badly. And the first incident happened at SCG Milwaukee. It involved a young man named Kent Ketter, who made it all the way to the finals with Dredge. And so from what I understand, there was an incident involving Rest in Peace, which is a card I've lovingly discussed on this show. And so Kent was playing against a young man on... I'm trying to be nice here. Fuck, Rest in Peace. So Kent is playing Banzeldrazi, and if I understand correctly, his opponent plays Rest in Peace. Kent moves his graveyard as if to exile it, and then returns the graveyard back. And a judge gets called at some point, and Kent's explanation for why he did that is he says that his opponent did not announce the Rest in Peace trigger. Essentially, his opponent missed the Rest in Peace trigger, and because of that, he did not feel he should have to exile his graveyard. And from what I understand, that call stuck. Mm-hmm. And that led to Reddit, of course, picking up on it, and a lot of discussions about, you know, is this right? Is this rules lawyering? Is this true? Like, there were some people that didn't know this. Card Hoarder got involved, who is Kent's sponsor. He's on the Card Hoarder team. And it was definitely the controversy for the week. And, you know, Katie, as sort of our resident judge, you know, how do you feel about this? You know, how do you feel about somebody saying, well, yeah, you played Rest in Peace, which to anybody else would mean next game. But in this case, you didn't announce your trigger, and so I'm not going to do this.
Oh, man. So I watched the video on this. This is a messy pile. Mm. Messy pile.
And we're not talking about his graveyard, because I watched him play, and I was there during his finals match, and I had some concerns with how Mr. Ketter handled his graveyard, but that's neither here nor there.
So I think this depends a lot on the discussion with the judge and the players. Like, so Rest in Peace does have a trigger on it. And it's one of those triggers where a lot of people shortcut and will just do it. But it is a trigger nonetheless that has to be acknowledged. If, like, if your opponent just sits there when you play, like, Rest in Peace, you have to acknowledge, like, yes, I want this trigger to happen. Can you please exile your graveyard? The fact, so I watched the video and it does look like he, kind of was on autopilot and moved his graveyard and then was like, oh wait, I don't have to do this until he says something. Which I can completely understand. I have been in that exact same spot. But then, you know, we can't hear exactly what the players are saying to each other. And it seems like he was asking, like, are you sure you want to pass the turn? Like, is it my turn? Whose turn is it? And it just looks so messy. And I don't think, with very limited knowledge and only watching the video, my personal opinion is that he was not trying to cheat. But I do think that in this case, it is kind of angle shooting. And that's the reason why is because as his opponent, if you see out of the corner of your eye, and you're on autopilot and you're like, I'm going to play Rest in Peace. He's going to exile. And then you see him move the graveyard and then you're like, okay, he's moved the graveyard and you keep going. It's not something that everybody just like fully consciously registers. And then when Kent moves it back, you know, he might have just kind of missed that the graveyard was, I mean, it was only one card, I think. So he might have just kind of missed that the graveyard got moved back. And I think that's where there was just a huge miscommunication between the two players at that time. And, you know, I don't know what the judge, you know, was reasoning through or what kind of talk they had between the two players. But this, to me, seems just like a huge misunderstanding. And triggers, a lot of people had questions about if triggers had to be acknowledged vocally or with a nod. And basically, it's kind of whatever the players have set up to have be acknowledged. So, like, if somebody plays something and you, which, you know, should have a trigger for you to lose life, and you go to write down your life. That's kind of you acknowledging the trigger. Mm-hmm. You didn't say anything, but, you know, you confirm life totals later or whatever. If somebody does something and you nod your head yes, that's not a vocal accepted thing, but if your opponent and you are both on the same wavelength that you are using body language to accept it, then that's, you know, your guys' accepted shortcut. So in this case, I think it was kind of a miscommunication on both players. I don't think Kent should have moved it back, but that doesn't mean that people don't do that out of habit. I've actually had this exact same scenario come up when I played Rest in Peace against Brooke in a PPTQ.
Katie.
And,
you played Rest in Peace?
Girl. That's
how
kind
did
of...
you get on the show?
I didn't include that in my little resume. but I played Rest in Peace. Brooke kind of moved his hand onto the graveyard and then didn't do anything. And then he just kind of like stared at me with that look like, I'm going to make you say it. And then I was like, oh yeah, this is a trigger. Can you please like do your graveyard? And it wasn't the kind of thing where he would have ever like let me keep going and had me miss the trigger. But he is just like, just remember, it is a trigger. And it's one of those cards that so many people instinctively just do. There are some cards where a lot of people are like, yeah, you need to acknowledge it. But there's some cards like this one where a lot of people will just do it. But either way, I don't know. I think it was just a big miscommunication. I don't think people should be lighting their pitchforks quite yet. I don't know anything about Kent Kitterer's background or anything, but sometimes that's the best way to evaluate someone and what they did. I guess overall, both of them should have just been a little bit clearer. And yeah, Rest in Peace would suck to have played against you, but maybe angle shooting wasn't quite the best way to go about it. So, you know, what he did, I think, I don't know, I don't want to say it was like illegal or legal in the rules of the game, but it just definitely was misconstrued.
Yeah, I mean, as somebody who, you know, is a fan of graveyard-themed decks, I've never thought to wait for a trigger announcement. Like, I know that when I see Rest in Peace, we're going to game three, or I'm signing the slip. Like, I see Rest in Peace, and I'm just exiling my graveyard. I've never waited for that. And when I first heard about this, I was thinking about that, and I was like, huh. I was like, I wonder how many games I could have won if I had just not not move my graveyard. Like if I had done, like you said, Katie, where they play Rest in Peace and I wait, and if nothing mm-hmm. comes of it, then I'm just going to keep going. Like, I've never thought to do that. And maybe mm-hmm. I'm just a nicer person, or like maybe I just play the game differently, but it's never occurred to me to ever try that. And, you know, is this something that we want to be advocating? Like, do we want to tell people that you can play like this? Like, that's where I'm not really, I just don't feel good about it.
Right. And I think there's so much gray area that it's hard to say. And it kind of depends on everybody's moral obligations. Like, some people feel that that is wrong. And then some people who are, you know, very competitive players say, like, if they don't acknowledge what their cards are doing, it's well within the rights of the game to, you know, have them miss it. And that's not my fault. That's their fault for not knowing what their cards are doing. But then with the added complexity of moving the graveyard and moving it back as like a second thought, you know, then it just gets a lot messier. But I think it's up to each individual players. We've talked about, you know, competitive etiquette versus casual etiquette before. And it just, if you want to be a tight competitive player, I think being overly cautious and acknowledging everything is not a bad thing to do. However, I do think shortcuts come into the game, and it seems like Rest in Peace is often a shortcut for a lot of players.
Yeah, I mean, that was the part that really kind of, you know, I know that Dredge is an unpopular deck, and I know that it's something a lot of people don't enjoy playing with, and so I try to make sure that I'm as above board as possible. Like, I actually received a lot of compliments on the way that I lay out my graveyard when I was on the feature match, because they were like, it was very easy to read, we were able to understand what was going on, you know, my opponents could clearly see what was going on, and, you know, because I know that my deck is capable of really doing really busted things, I try to be as transparent as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not stacking my graveyard in some, you know, crooked line down the board. I'm not doing just one fat pile. You know, I'm really trying to make it as clear as possible for myself and also for the opponent as well. And, you know, in my mind, that's sort of the least I can do. And, you know, I'm just not sure. Like I said, just all of this murkiness just sounds really weird. And, you know, Chris, how do you feel? You know, is this something that you would do or that you advocate?
Let's see. Cause I have like, cause I can see both sides of it. Like I could see someone just kind of doing something autopilot, playing a card, being like, okay, this is just what this does. And maybe your opponent maybe acknowledging it, maybe not. I mean, I watched the video. I've read his explanation. I've read Card Hoarder's statement. I don't know that he did it to be scummy. I'm not him. I can't prove that. Will I say that? Maybe he realized that, hey, I have an advantage here. If my opponent did not announce their trigger, that this is a way for me to get out of this situation. Perhaps. I don't know that there's necessarily anything, quote, wrong with that. He does move the graveyard, but it's not like he didn't take his hand off it from what I could see. So I can see, like I said, I can see both sides of the situation. I don't know that that's something that I personally would have done. But I don't know what it's like to be a grinder, a pro player, any of these things. I don't know what it's like to look at the game from a certain perspective. So I can't say whether or not that, you know, they made the right call or not. I know that Kent is standing behind his decision and he's like, I don't think that I did anything scummy. You know, this is how this works. And I know that there were other people that, you know, did support him in that statement. I can't outright say that he did anything that appears to be like, just kind of shitty. But I can see why some people may be like, oh, I can't believe that he would do this. But at the same time, It's a game. There is a strategic advantage involved within playing it. And sometimes people get you on those technicalities. I've seen it enough where it's like, whoop, nope, you missed your trigger. You're done. You're mm-hmm. done. Like, you don't get this now. And I can understand it. So I think it's just part of playing the game, but I can see why some people may feel that he did something that was disingenuous.
Yeah. There was also a situation involving a young man named Oliver Tew, who's had a really big year, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. He was playing at GP Providence. and he was DQ'd for supposedly offering. So if I remember the statement correctly, the word PayPal came up when he was trying to offer a split. Or some sort of concession. And, I was trying to come up with a really cool pun for this. Like, he got D2'd.
God.
Or 2Q'd, but that one didn't really work. I think I like D2'd better. So he got D2'd. And this didn't seem to get as much press as Kent Ketter. And it seems like concessions like this have always been sort of like an open secret, and that from what I was seeing based on like social media, it's how you word it. And he just happened to word it wrong. And that's why he got in trouble. And, you know, Katie, I don't know if you can explicitly like tell people what to say necessarily, but like, it's my impression that, you know, the game has been trying to move away from things like this, that we actually want people to have to play their win-and-ins. We want people to play when they're in the top eight. And so is it true? Like, is this just something that happens all the time and he just said it wrong? Or like, is this just sort of wrong in general?
Within the rules, there are ways to bypass it without breaking the rules. And a lot of people, there's been a lot of discussion for quite a long time because the rules do let loopholes through. And a lot of people know how to take advantage of that. And for the game not wanting there to be any aspect of bribery, it leaves open a lot of interpretation, a lot of like the exact sentence structure. And if there's things in two different sentences versus one, it's like a big kind of mess. And so, I'm sure that there's been discussions when like creating new rules and doing revisings of the current rules about how to fix this. And maybe there might not be a good way to fix it. Like, I don't know how they could state in the rules to cover every possible scenario. There are certain ways that you can say things separate from other things to kind of get what you want, unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, depending on your point of view. I do trust Steven Zwanger to have done a very thorough investigation on this before just DQing. And if the wording was to the point where he was like, yeah, that's just pure bribery, then I'm sure he made the right call. But this has been something that I don't think has gotten enough attention, because before top eights of certain events, I've had players ask me, so if I were to say this, would that be considered bribery or is that okay? And I think just having this whole level of like secrecy where everybody knows what's trying to be accomplished, but nobody wants to say it out loud, just kind of makes for like a feel bad time, especially if somebody happens to say it the wrong way and just gets DQ'd. So it was probably warranted in this situation if Zwanger thought it was, but there's so much that just needs hammered out, and kind of needs a clear line, because it's so fuzzy that people just try and walk it all the time. And sometimes you're on the right side and sometimes you're on the DQ side. So I don't know. I don't think that this necessarily makes Oliver too a bad person in any way. 'Cause a lot of people do it, and you know, what he was trying to get out of it, as well as what his opponent was trying to get out of it, they both seemed to end up happily in agreement. But just with the rules of Magic, it didn't fit right. So that sucks.
It reminds me when I used to work, I used to work in an adult bookstore in my early 20s, and we used to sell pipes. And we used to have to remind people that they were for tobacco use only, even though we really knew what they were for. There was like this plausible deniability. And as long as somebody didn't say what they were going to do with it, everything was fine. Like, you could buy your water pipe. We would give you a little paper disclaimer and you could go about your day. But the minute somebody said something stupid, like, we're going to go home and make brownies, it was like, all right, you're out. Like, I can't, you've ruined it. You've said too much. I can't sell you these anymore. And that's what kind of this reminds me of. Like, you can do this as long as you either don't say too much or you just don't say anything at all. And, you know, when people sometimes cross that line and they say something they don't know about, that's when they get in trouble. And so, you know, know a lot of times we would get people that violated that rule and then they would come back and they're like, I'm here for my tobacco pipe. And it's like, there you go. And like their friend would tell them what to say. And then going forward, they would know what to say. And so I think like, you know, if you are kind of in the know, you'll know exactly how to put this. But if you don't, mm-hmm. then you're going to say something stupid and get DQ'd. And it's terrible. Like, I agree with you, Katie. It just seems like I think the moral of all these stories is that, you know, we sometimes don't understand or we forget how much room there is for interpretation in these rules and, dare I say, loopholes. And it would be nice if one day they all just sort of got hammered out or plugged so that the rest in peace thing doesn't happen and the DQ doesn't happen. And, you know, there's just a lot of, you know, exploiting that can happen.
For sure. And there's so much in the rules that's strictly about communication that it's like, you can't stop people from saying certain things and saying them a certain way. And, you know, there's just not room, like, in all the pages that could be written about every single possibility. So it sucks when something kind of falls by the wayside and there's not a great way to fix it.
Yeah. So before we go, Katie, you had pitched something to me that you'd kind of heard about that might be happening at events in the future. And it's called a diversity lounge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Why don't you tell us about it?
So I got approached by Trevor Murdoch, who is a level one judge from Victoria, British Columbia. And we've talked before. He's a big proponent of the show. He's a co-founder of Planeswalkers for Diversity. He's on a podcast, MTG Diversity. And he let me know this week. He asked me if I was going to an event next year. And I was like, no, I think I have school then. So probably not. What's going on? And he said that he had a diversity lounge proposal for GPs in 2017. And so what this is if you've been to PAX in recent years, they've had diversity lounges. They're kind of becoming a big thing at, different gaming conventions. And he's a big proponent of having them at Grand Prix. So basically it's a space where that would be kind of like, not walled off, curtained off, just like the VIP lounge or something, where community organizations like Planeswalkers for Diversity, Lady Planeswalker Society, different groups can come set up booths. They can teach players how to play Magic. Maybe you have a significant other who always comes with you to events but doesn't know how to play and they just kind of wander around lost. Well, there would be a place for them to learn how to play Magic. And I really liked the proposal. It's written very well. It kind of lays out, what TOs could get from this, as a benefit, like publicity. Maybe there'd be more people who showed up to GPs so they could learn how to play Magic and have a safe space to hang out. And then it lays out the cost, you know, who would run it, how much space would it need, how many tables, et cetera, et cetera. And basically, he's just going to present it to TOs and see kind of who wants to take the first step in doing it. he laid out a plan of like how many judges you'd have on it for each day, what their cost would be, you know, how much he had, like, basically a space layout for it of this foot by this foot space would be needed. It was very beautifully done. And I think that would be a great addition to all GPs. I don't see why people wouldn't do this. Having a safe space to go if you're, you know, white male, typical Magic player, or if you're non-binary or any other, you know, ethnicity, race, protected class of any sort, I think that having a safe space like this would be a great addition to Grand Prix.
Yeah, I think this would also be really great. I know a lot of folks have social anxiety and just sometimes being in a room full of 1,500 strangers, you know, mm-hmm. A very loud space, you know, a very hectic space. You know, I think, you know, even if you don't necessarily fall into those camps that we just mentioned, you know, just having a quiet place to go to and sort of clear your head, I think that would certainly be an asset to events. You know, Chris, what do you think about that?
I absolutely agree. I was really impressed with the Diversity Lounge at PAX the year before. And if it's anything like that, I'm totally behind it. You know, you could learn more about different groups that you didn't know before. You could learn about, you know, different people. You can, and then I know that at least at PAX, they had TakeThis.org was there, and they do a lot of advocating for people if they're dealing with, like, depression and, you know, thoughts of suicide or things like that. And I think anything like that is something positive to have at a Magic tournament. You know, like you say, you need a couple minutes, go relax, you know, have some time to yourself, and then go back and dive back into some magical cards. And I think that that's something that would be very beneficial to a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think it also helps because there's been a lot of talk lately about trying to turn GPs into more of like conventions instead of just competitive zones. You know, like there's been, you know, we're seeing cosplayers come out more. We're seeing more events that aren't necessarily spiky. You know, like there's a lot of artists constructed happening, you know, tiny leaders, you know, people are not necessarily going to GPs just for the main event, or they're not necessarily mm-hmm. going for the prize support. And there's been a lot of talk about what are things we can introduce to have that appeal to all Magic players. And so I think having things like this that appeal to a wider audience and also to people that might be more casual or who might be newer to the game but don't really have anywhere to actually go to learn, you know, kind of like when we were at PAX and we had the LPS teaching people how to play, you know, I think if you could actually go to a GP and learn how to play, I think that would be a really novel concept. And I'm all for, you know, GPs kind of spreading out and doing a bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he also had a list at the bottom of his proposal of different judges who would be interested in helping run this at events. So there's a lot of judges who want different experience in different areas of GPs, whether it's on the main floor, running casual tournaments as side events, or doing registration or whatever. So if you're a judge who would be interested in helping to make this happen, letting Trevor Murdoch know that you're interested, I think he could add your name to the list, and then that would kind of take some of the scheduling concerns away, just because if somebody doesn't like teaching people how to play Magic, it's probably not best for them to be scheduled to run the place where you teach people how to play Magic.
I'll make sure I don't volunteer.
So if you're somebody who does like that and wants to help out, you can reach him at on Twitter at MTG Diversity, or he's hanging out around Facebook. And their podcast can also be listened to at mtgdiversity.org/podcasts. I think they're 5 or 6 episodes in, and I've heard really great things about them. So I'll give them a listen, and hopefully they can get this, you know, ball rolling, because I'm excited to see it at future events.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I was just kidding, by the way. I've had a lot of fun teaching new people Magic. So I've actually had a really good time doing that, especially children, and especially if they want to play black decks. I'm completely for teaching the new generation. So we're actually running kind of long, so I think we're going to scrap the Commander 2016 thing. So before we go, is there anything else that you guys wanted to get off your chest or that you had in mind? Okay. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger, that's MeanMugger, or twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG, or you can find me on Snapchat, katie.neil14. It's mostly still Watson and or struggling with school, so if you're not interested in that, don't worry, you're not missing out on a whole bunch.
But isn't it true that he has his own Instagram now, or his own Snapchat?
Oh, he does have his own Instagram. It's bearded_Watson. So if you want to follow him there, there is going to be exclusive pictures put on Instagram of just Watson.
What are you going to do when he has more followers than you do?
Oh, well, praise Watson.
Praise Watson.
He deserves it. He's so darn cute and feisty.
I love it. Oh my God. And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ. My Snapchat is Cryptic Command, spelled with K's. And my blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. I've been a little delayed writing one of the new blog posts, but it's coming along. It's getting there. So hopefully very soon it will be out.
It's in your brain meats.
It is. It is rusting in there.
Very Halloween themed.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, man. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. That's OriginalEstrus. You can email me at OriginalEstrus@gmail.com. The show is on Twitter at @TheGFBracket. You can email us at TheGirlfriendBracket@gmail.com, Patreon.com/TheGirlfriendBracket if you'd like to support us financially. And we come out every Friday at GatheringMagic.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.